The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
After intensive negotiations continued last night, hopes are high that a draft Brexit deal may be ready in time for the EU leaders' summit tomorrow. Could we now be looking at the UK actually leaving the EU by the end of the month? Alistair Campbell, former advisor to Tony Blair, is on the line. Alistair, good morning.
Hi there.
What do you make of it? Is this truly the end game?
I honestly don't think you can say that it is. I think it feels like there is the makings of a deal there. The question, though, is whether this has come too late, whether they have the time to get it through all the governments. You've got to remember with this, you're talking about, you know, we focus obviously a lot on the British and Irish context, but you're talking about 27 governments here, all of whom have a vested interest in this, all of whom have to see the legal text. And so it feels actually very, very rushed to me. And it feels that my sense is that I think there may, whatever the circumstances, be an extension. And also, don't forget, within the politics of the UK, I know that people are sick to death of it, but you have to understand that the arithmetic in our parliament, bear in mind, if all the briefing and the leaks are accurate, and we're talking about a border in the Irish Sea, you're talking about something that has been described as anathema by many, many Tories. You're talking about something that Boris Johnson, we know that he sort of will say whatever it takes to get him through the day, but we're talking about something that he said no British government would ever allow. Theresa May said the same. So you've got the two things. Will there be a deal? Can it get through Parliament? And then, if not, what happens then?
Some sort of a framework may emerge, but there are the possibilities they'll simply say, look, the bones of a deal are there, but we need more time. This is a technical document and there are, you know, some details we can iron out later, but key details have got to be agreed before we put it to the leaders. So we need, therefore, another summit next week. What happens in the House of Commons in that regard? Because if they don't have a deal by Sunday, they're supposed to write the letter looking for an extension on Monday.
Well, I think it becomes very complicated. And the law is that if there's no deal by the end of this summit, then the Bent Act applies and he has to write asking for an extension. Now, what might happen is that, I mean, if you go back to the Conservative Party leadership, lots of the contenders were saying, well, if there was a short extension to tie up loose ends, blah, blah, blah. But the problem that Johnson has is, I think, one of trust. I think a lot of the MPs don't trust him. I think a lot of his colleagues don't trust him. And I think the European leaders don't particularly trust him. They also know, I mean, the people that I talk to around European capitals, I think you get a sense that they know that what drives them at the moment is this desperation to get to a general election, because he thinks that whereas a referendum, which I'm campaigning for, would require 50% election, you can get a mandate for whatever it is you want to try to do on mid-30s. So I think they have a sense of that. I think also there is a feeling that this was sprung upon them very, very late. The first deal that he put forward, the letter that he sent to the European Commission president, was absolutely never going to fly. Customs checks on the island of Ireland, conflict with the Good Friday Agreement, conflict with the single market, and the DUP having a veto. Now, that he seems to have, this guy, for all his bluster, he seems to have caved in left, right and centre. And that will produce its own dynamic in the House of Commons, and we'll just have to see that pans out.
Now, you weren't negotiating with the DUP at the Good Friday Agreement, but you were negotiating with David Trimble. What's happened overnight is the DUP are being characterised by many commentators as, you know, it's show me the size of the cheque and we will roll. I'm not sure that is an accurate characterisation of the unionist mentality in Northern Ireland.
It's true that the DUP were very much against the Good Friday Agreement, and one of my most vivid memories was of Ian Paisley at the gates, shouting and bawling at midnight as another deadline came and went. And it was interesting last night. I mean, look, when you say shows the sign of the check, size of the check, and that's how people see them. I mean, there is kind of form on that. That's the first thing to say. But secondly, I do agree. I think that, look, the DUP have got themselves in this very odd position where most of the business community, most of the farming community, for the first time actually seems to have been kind of, you know, very much distancing itself to some extent. Now, I find it very, very hard to see how the DUP, I find it hard to see how the Conservative Party, which let me remind you is called, its full title is the Conservative and Unionist Party, given all the noises that lots of Tories and DUP people have made about the idea of Northern Ireland being treated differently to the rest of the UK, that surely has always been the biggest argument against the proposal that now seems to be the basis of any deal.
And you look at the ERG and Jacob Rees-Mogg and others saying, you know, we can live with the deal the Prime Minister is doing. He is, after all, a true committed leaver and da-da-da-da-da. Also, you know, Rees-Mogg has a big job in the current government. Why are the ERG sort of leaning in to support Boris Johnson in a way they could not do for Theresa May if this deal is, you know, Theresa May light?
That is a very good question. It was interesting. Amber Rudd yesterday was speculating that part of it may be straightforward sexism, that they don't mind sort of, you know, siding up with bloke where they find it a bit harder when it's a woman. I don't know if that's right or wrong. But I also think it may be simply that the kind of commitment to the union and to Northern Ireland at the time of that Theresa May was Prime Minister was very much a tactic to destroy her deal, which they didn't like, because she was trying to keep as close as possible to the European economic institutions. And what I think that there's Steve Baker and these guys and Rees-Mogg, what I think they might like about what Johnson is trying to do is actually that it's going to lead to what they've always wanted, which is a bonfire of the rights and regulations that have protected people in the workplace, protected the environment, and just go for that kind of, you know, hard right business free-for-all that is very much, I think, what part of them have been about. I've said to you before, I've always seen Brexit, when you boil it down, when you strip away the slogans, when you take away the fact that it was David Cameron lobbing a hand grenade into our constitution and people being able to sort of lodge a protest vote, for me it's always been a project of the right, for the right, by the right. This is a right-wing economic project, and I think that's probably why people like Steve Baker may be prepared to swallow all the words they've said before. Although, interestingly, one of our newspapers today, I think it's The Sun, Tom Newton-Dunn, who I think is quite plugged into the right wing of the Tory party, he's saying that people like Duncan Smith and Owen Paterson are not having this. So we're going to, you know, listen, we're going to have to wait and see. And then the other part of the equation is what Labour MPs are going to do. Those Labour MPs who are desperate to get a deal of some sort and just to get Brexit off the plate.
The question then, it goes to Parliament, and I presume there will be an attempt to amend the vote that's put to Parliament to allow for a referendum, a people's vote, if you like. What will happen to the deal if that is put to the House? Is there sufficient support, say, from Labour to vote it through with the amendment? So therefore, you have to have a delay because to organise a referendum will take several weeks, one imagines. And effectively, could you have Boris Johnson voting against the deal that his negotiators have cut?
I mean, I think you're getting right ahead of yourself. We don't know what he's going to bring forward on Saturday. Parliament is, it seems, I mean, Parliament still has to vote, I think, today, as to whether Parliament will sit on Saturday. I expect if there is even the outlines of a deal, it would be very odd to me if they didn't. It's going to be quite a day because actually the People's Vote campaign, we're organising a huge march on Saturday. Any of your listeners who've got friends in the UK, tell them to get on that march on Saturday, midday at Park Lane. And I think that there is certainly, I've noticed in recent weeks, a real shift. I did an interview with John McDonnell for GQ last week, and he admitted that he's moved. He's been on quite a journey in terms of where he now is on the people's vote. He thinks there has to be a referendum whatever the outcome, whether it's a deal or it's no deal, there has to be a referendum. Rebecca Long Bailey, another Labour frontbencher who's been very reluctant, very resistant, she said the same this week. And then on the Tory side, you've got people like, you've got some of the Tories, Oliver Letwin, I know, is I think already there. Even Ken Clark, who is not remotely a fan of referendums, has always been against a second referendum, but sort of saying, you know, reluctantly, maybe this is the only way we can now resolve this. Now, how that happens in Parliament is, of course, very, very difficult. But those who say we don't have the numbers, it's true that the last one, Theresa May did her indicative votes, we didn't have the numbers for a people's vote. But it was the most popular option, and I think there has been movement towards it. But the reason why Johnson and his crew are so passionately opposed to it is because although they talk about the will of the people, they're actually scared of what the will of the people now is, because there's not a poll that has taken place over the last 2 years that doesn't show that if there was a referendum, then the people would actually choose to stay in the European Union.
On that note, Alistair Campbell, thank you very much for taking our call. Neil Richmond, Fine Gael Senator, has been listening to that conversation. Neil, good morning.
Good morning.
What are you hearing overnight as to the various attitudes of the various parties? I mean, optimism, yesterday we heard from Simon Coveney, with the caveat, we heard also from the Taoiseach, lot of things still to be done to get over the obstacles. Arlene Foster saying the Good Friday Agreement requires in any fundamental changes that might be wrought that you have to have assent from both nationalists and unionists, and yet there's no assembly. So what's your take?
Well, I think cautious optimism is still the note, but I think the negotiations went on till 1:30 a.m. last night, or this morning, resumed at 8:30 a.m. Brussels time this morning. There's still quite a bit of work to do, and I think one thing we do know for sure is I'm not in the room. Lots of people who are commenting on this aren't in the room. So I think we need to be very cautious of what's being said, who's tweeting, who's taking the hot take, allow the talks to take place. Hopefully you can get to a situation where a deal can be approved in time to go to the European Council tomorrow, can be approved by Westminster in due course, and we can reach Halloween knowing that there's a deal on the table and the key issues to Ireland, to the EU have been protected.
At the same time, your understanding of Europe and the way it works, do you think that, you know, if there's any kind of a shape on a deal, the 27 will say, let's do this, because we've been plagued with Brexit for years now, and it has diverted us from very important work that requires to be done?
Oh, very much so. I know, particularly when you go further east, when you go to countries who aren't as specifically affected by Brexit, to say we are the Benelux countries, they have issues in relation to migration, security, and of course we have a European budget that we need to negotiate very soon. But people are keen to make sure that it is the right deal, that the single market is protected, and equally the Good Friday Agreement is protected. That is paramount. That's the mandate Michel Barnier has been given, and that's the mandate that he continues to negotiate with.
Okay, so cautious optimism, but as the Taoiseach said the other day, many slip twixt cup and lip. So we're not there yet.
We're not there yet, but hopefully the day might bring some news. And if not, as the Taoiseach says, we'll negotiate 24/7 right up until the last moment on the 31st of October, because the prospect of a no deal is so very bad for Ireland, the EU and the UK, that everything has to be done to try and avoid that.
Fine Gael Senator Neil Richmond, thank you very much. Now, just to get a sense of what the Brexiteers might be thinking, David Davis said, the MP, he was the chief negotiator for exiting the European Union from July 2016 to September 2017, and he was being questioned about the deal on BBC Radio 4 this morning. Let's have a listen.
To start with, on the Northern Ireland bit, is this not remarkably similar to what Theresa May proposed and you and Boris Johnson rejected as an outrage?
No, not exactly, and let me tell you why. There are three criteria for what was acceptable for Northern Ireland. One is it doesn't break up the union. That's the first thing. Second one is that Northern Ireland can have equal advantage out of leaving, be part of the free trade agreements. And a third one is that they have democratic rights, that they can't suddenly, say, be in a single market and have the rules laid down in Brussels, and they have not even a representative there, let alone a say in it. All those three things are now being addressed. Why are they being addressed? Because the threat of no deal eventually brought the European Union to the table and talked detail. And they're dealing with all of those in detail. And it sounds like, but patching together all the bits we've heard this morning, it sounds like they're doing it successfully.
And yet you in the House of Commons stood up as Brexit Secretary and said, we will not be treating any part of the United Kingdom differently from any other part. Well, yeah. Yes, you will. You're about to agree to a deal.
But take my test.
Treats regulations and rules differently for Northern Ireland and the UK, and will treat customs differently.
But take my test. What we see, or if we believe what we read, there's going to be complete openness between the British market, as it were, the rest of the UK market and Northern Irish market for British goods sold in Northern Ireland and Northern Irish goods sold in Britain. There would be a red channel, as it were, for outside goods. That's what we're told. So that preserves that bit of it. In terms of the union, we're not seeing a breakup of the union in those terms. The test of that, of course, will be the DUP. And you said 10 votes, by the way, earlier. And just as an aside on that, there'll be quite a lot of Tory MPs will take their line from what the DUP do. They take a similar view on the unions.
Well, Arlene Foster said on this programme that the issue of a customs divide between Northern Ireland and the UK, the rest of the UK, was, quotes, a blood red line.
Well, let's see when she sees the detail of the deal, whether she thinks this is a blood red line or whether it's an acceptable compromise.
Well, that's the key. If she says not acceptable, will David Owen say not acceptable?
Well, I'll read it myself. I mean, I have a constituency represent. I actually make up my own mind.
As David Davis there, not really caring about what the DUP think, but he will make up his own mind, irrespective of what they may feel about it.